A look behind the corn syrup debate, TV and global health initiatives, and food allergies. Do you need more than one EpiPen? Plus, we're going to take a look at Addison's disease in our tip of the week this week. If that's what you're looking for, guess what? You found it. It's the Nursing Show. Well, good day, and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and everybody out there that's a brand new listener especially, I want to remind you, you can find a lot more information, other articles, study aids, and also, of course, all of the links in the show notes for every episode produced by The Nursing Show every week. You'll find all of that over at nursingshow.com. Of course, the show notes link, there's a link right at the top of the page. Just click on that, and you'll see the most recent episode listed first, and then it goes back in time, so you can scroll back down there and check out all of the information in that particular category, or you can look at other articles and information, and there's also a link at the top of the page for some good student study aids tips for those nursing students out there that are nearing the end of your semester and maybe looking for some additional assistance. If you have any questions or comments about the show, and especially corrections, sometimes I flub up and will be speaking about something and make an error, and I want you to let me know right away so we can get that out on the next show and make a correction. You can do that by sending in those comments, questions, and corrections to nursingshow@gmail.com. That's our email address. You can also always leave comments on the articles over at the Nursing Show site, and you'll find a comments link both at the top and the bottom of most of the articles over there, and that includes the show notes. So take advantage of that opportunity to share with the rest of the Nursing Show community. And I do consider this a community. I really love to hear from each and every one of you. We've really got a lot more people checking in by email, including one of the listeners, a listener, Philip, checking in about changing his career to nursing. And he's really looking at doing something different with his life. He's been working in a career in architecture and has decided he wants to do something to help people and wanted to know if I had any ideas or thoughts on that. And, you know, Philip, we've been talking about changing careers a good bit in the last few months here on The Nursing Show. And one of the things that we've discussed is that, you know, there's no time like the present. The most important thing, I think, is to find out about the nursing programs in your region. A lot of people look at different online options for nursing programs. You really need to make sure that those initial RN programs that are available online are indeed accredited and recognized by your state board of nursing. So you need to first start there. But there are usually community college options and other programs that can get you in the door in nursing, and then you can advance your degree to a BSN or an MSN and beyond. Certainly, many of these online programs are set up to do that very well. And I hope that helps, Philip, and I know there's a lot of other people that had a similar question. If you have a question like Philip did, don't hesitate to send that information in. Again, nursingshow@gmail.com is our email address, and of course, you can always leave those comments over on the Nursing Show site. When you leave a comment there, it actually emails me, so I will find out you left a comment right away, and I can get over there, and I usually try to leave a comment back for you as well. Let's jump on into this week's news, and I'm leading off with a story that I found over at CNN.com. This has been an ongoing debate regarding high fructose corn syrup. It's been the sweetener of choice for much of the food product industry. When we have a lot of processed foods out there, they've put sweeteners in it, and this can be anything from spaghetti sauce, to things you really don't think of as having a sweetener in it. But they've added this to a lot of foods, and there's been a lot of concern that this may be one of the culprits, one of the things that has increased the incidence of things like obesity, diabetes, and other problems in our healthcare system. And how can we combat this? Indeed, the whole thing of making corn the culprit has been a big debate because this is a big business, and big business brings out big dollars and research grants, and who's got the right of it? A new Princeton University study recently released has been the first or the latest in the studies to be attacked, basically because there are some people that are saying that it says that cane sugar, table sugar, is better than high fructose corn syrup and that this vilifies the corn syrup over the other sugar. Researchers in this study have countered that by saying, we just looked at high fructose corn syrup. We didn't compare it to another sugar. We were looking at how this particular type of diet did affected the rats in the study compared to a normal rat diet. And they didn't compare it to cane sugar, and they just were looking at the physiological changes in these rats over a long period of time on this diet. And they point out that we are not just eating high fructose corn syrup one time. We are eating it in small doses in a lot of the foods we consume everywhere, every day, over and over and over again, and over a period of years, this may have longer-term physiological impacts on us. I think the lesson to be learned here, for nurses at least, is that we really need to educate people about all aspects of nutrition and understand that any kind of sugar is indeed an empty calorie, that that calorie doesn't contain any additional nutritional content. It only is available for burning up. So there's no vitamins, there's no additional things added to it. And vitamin drinks and sweetened drinks that claim to have vitamins added really are empty calories as well. We really need to be looking at a broader dietary change, and nurses can impact patient care greatly by helping people get into nutritional education programs. We talked about helping people to learn how to cook in a busy lifestyle. Those kind of classes for your communities could be a huge body change for your community as a whole, I think, is the way I'd like to put that. And you should consider some kind of outreach, working with your local facilities or home health care or your public health department. Find a way to get some of these classes into the community, talking about nutrition and helping people to understand fun ways to change their diets and get rid of all of these empty calories, whether it's cane sugar or high fructose corn syrup. None of them are really very good for you. The next story looks at TV and its effects on our understanding of different things. I think there's been a lot of talk about TV and violence and how it affects children, but can TV actually increase our awareness of health issues? There's a study, actually an event that was in Washington, D.C., late in March, and this is an organization called the Hollywood Health and Society Program, and that's at the University of Southern California, USC. And boy, you know, Hollywood Health and Society, do you think those things go together? I don't know. But one of the things they talked about was that using television programming to raise awareness of global health issues, and they pointed to a recent episode of the TV show Law & Order SVU, where they focused on issues regarding rape and the transmission of HIV from mother to child, specifically in some parts of the world, including in the Congo. And this type of educational programming, and I hesitate to call it that, but I guess there could be some educational benefit to that, can raise awareness of some of these global health issues. Could we be doing more to raise awareness of the numbers of people killed by malaria, for instance? There's a huge need for us to really combat this illness on a worldwide basis. In the United States, we've largely removed malaria as a problem, but people don't realize that malaria was an issue in the U.S., especially in the southern U.S., where it was moist, warm most of the time, and people would contract malaria in places like Florida and the southern U.S., but we, through heavy use of pesticides, actually eradicated malaria to a large extent in the U.S. However, we now don't allow those pesticides to be used overseas because of the environmental concerns, and this is greatly harming, slowing the results of getting malaria eradicated in other parts of the world. So that's just one thing. Take a look at the article. Think about how you might be able to influence something you care about in the healthcare arena by getting it featured on a major television program. Finally, a look at a study that was conducted in Boston for 1,200 children with food allergies treated between 2001 and 2006, looking at whether their single-dose EpiPen that they were prescribed was enough to treat their allergy in the immediate need in the field, before they were able to get to the hospital and get further treatment. that these reactions were so severe that these children actually needed a two-dose EpiPen or two EpiPens to get the job done. For any of you out there that work with families, with children, you should certainly be aware that this is something that might be needed, and really stress to parents that they need to make sure that those EpiPens are with the child at all times to make sure that they're needed. And of course, any of you that work with people in the EMS sector and the pre-hospital sector should certainly be aware of that as well, that a double dose may be necessary to get these patients through by getting that epi on board when they're having a severe allergic reaction, whether it's to a food allergy or to anything. And this doesn't really expand that to allergies to things like bee stings or other things, really focusing on the food allergies such as peanut allergies, berry allergies, things like that. But we should be aware that in these children, a multiple dose option may be needed as a prescription for these patients. And so you should be reviewing that when you're looking at the people coming into your practice, into your facility, making sure that you make sure the physician, whoever's writing the prescription, is aware that this patient only has a single EpiPen prescribed. They should have two. That might be something that needs to be adjusted in the patient care plan. And hey, you're a nurse. That's what you do. Don't forget, you'll find links to all these news items in the show notes over at nursingshow.com. So if you want to follow up and get additional information or forward these articles to other people, you can do that over at nursingshow.com. This week on the Tip of the Week, we're going to be looking at Addison's disease, kind of a companion disease with Cushing's disease, the opposite disease, if you will, as we so often see in many of these endocrine disorders. So let's jump into that right now. So what is Addison's disease? Well, basically, it could be called adrenal insufficiency. We've talked recently, I think a couple of weeks ago on the nursing show, about Cushing's disease. So what are we talking about here when we talk about Addison's disease? Well, it's kind of, you could think of it kind of as the opposite of Cushing's disease. Cushing's disease is hypercortisolism, cortisol produced in the adrenal cortex. And so Addison's disease is really the reverse of that, not enough hormones being produced by the adrenal cortex. In this case, specifically cortisol and aldosterone. Aldosterone, of course, is part of the renin cycle. Aldosterone is a key portion of our control of fluid balance and salt in the system, sodium balance in the system, and really is part of how we either hold on to fluid by holding on to more sodium or releasing that sodium and then, of course, releasing fluid. If that's not present, we lose one of the major long-term controlling factors in our blood pressure. There are two types, primary versus secondary, as so often is the case. Primary really is talking about specific causes associated with the adrenal gland itself. Secondary causes would be anything outside of the adrenal gland, such as a pituitary dysfunction or an injury to other part of the body or some reaction to recent medication treatments we'll see associated with Addison's disease. Addisonian crisis is something else you might have heard about or remember from nursing school. Addisonian crisis is where someone is usually untreated for their Addison's disease, has been compensating for this insufficiency for a long period of time, and have really reached the point where something just tips the balance and tips them over into a full-blown crisis where these hormones aren't present. The body decides, well, they aren't present. I can't do the things I need to do anymore, such as manage blood sugar and manage blood pressure. And when those things go away, guess what? People have a life-threatening issue. So we'll look at that a little more later on. It tends to be rare, and some of the information I found says between 1 in 4 people per 100,000 in the population have Addison's disease. So it's not something you may likely see very frequently unless you're in an endocrine practice. You're associating with people that have endocrine disorders on a regular basis. However, there are things that can cause this, that secondary cause of Addison's disease or adrenal insufficiency, and we should be aware of the possibility that they could have something like this going on. Causes and risk factors. First off, autoimmune disorders are primary cause and are really associated with something like lupus or some other autoimmune disorder where we have the patient's own immune system attacking their organ systems. And in many cases, this might be a polyglandular problem involving more than just the adrenal glands. Pituitary disorder is also a possible cause. Remember, pituitary gland is responsible for releasing ACTH, adrenocorticotropic hormone. And when that ACTH is released, it stimulates the adrenal cortex to produce cortisol. When that doesn't happen, then the adrenal glands can atrophy and begin to decrease the release of anything when they're asked to release. That causes issues and ultimately Addison syndrome. Let's review that real quick. Remember, the adrenal cortex produces the hormone ACTH after a response from receiving CRH, corticotropic releasing hormone from the hypothalamus. The ACTH goes to the adrenal glands and stimulates the release of cortisol. And so that's how the cortisol is released and influenced by the pituitary gland. So we looked at polyglandular issues, pituitary disorders, tuberculosis, and other infections, including specifically infections that are these opportunistic infections associated with AIDS, the fungal infections, some of the unusual bacterial infections that we find in AIDS patients. They could be affecting the adrenal glands directly, having caused that infection in that location. And when that occurs, it causes the adrenals to stop functioning properly and under, when they're under attack like that. Tuberculosis used to be a common cause of Addison syndrome. In fact, that was how Dr. Addison back in the 1800s discovered this disorder, because he was treating TB patients. As tuberculosis was largely reduced in the developed world, this went away to a large extent as a primary cause. However, the return of those drug-resistant tuberculosis strains seems to be showing some signs of increase in Addison's disease. And again, this is when the tuberculosis bacteria actually infects the adrenal glands themselves, not just the lungs, like we think about tuberculosis as a disorder associated with spread by droplets. Once it's in the system, it can spread to other parts of the body. And we've talked about tuberculosis recently as well. There are also genetic and developmental causes for patients. If your family has a problem with a development of their adrenal glands, somebody might have an adrenal gland that is not capable of keeping up with the production in an adult body. The adrenal gland might have some kind of physical or anatomical developmental problems. So these could all be an issue as well. And usually there'll be a family history associated with that. I did find one place, and at eMedicine.com, there was a study over there looking at the fact that they thought that there was between a 1.5 and 3.5 times more likely chance for women to get Addison's syndrome. I was not able to find corroborating information on that at the CDC or the NIH sites, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't true, because they didn't talk about incidence men and women at all at those sites. So I'm not sure if they considered this as something to be included. Signs and symptoms. Hyperpigmentation is really one of the things that we think about with Addison syndrome, but it's only usually associated with primary causes of adrenal insufficiency. And again, this is that darkening of the skin, blotches, and large patches all over the body. Hyperpigmentation may be seen. There's usually chronic worsening fatigue, weakness, and this is muscle weakness. So the patients just generally, if you were to track their general muscle tone and their strength, you would see that over time this has been decreasing significantly. Loss of appetite, weight loss associated with the loss of appetite, also because they're becoming dehydrated, they're unable to maintain their fluids, they lose weight because of dehydration as well. Associated nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. As the cortisol production goes away, the ability to maintain normal GI function is affected, and this can be a cause for some of these issues, which again increase and worsen the dehydration problems and low blood pressure. Orthostatic low blood pressure issues. Usually people are fine sitting down, lying down. They stand up suddenly, and because of the low blood pressure and the inability to compensate adequately immediately, they will show signs of dizziness or syncope when they stand up suddenly. Use your skill for taking orthostatic vital signs to assess for this and see if that is one of the places where you're seeing a problem. Also, patients tend to be irritable and depressed, associated with just everything being out of whack in their system, and they just don't feel good, but it could be associated with other hormone issues as well. Patients may crave salty foods and have hypoglycemia, and this is related in some ways to the aldosterone, decreased production of aldosterone. Remember, that maintains our sodium balance in the system. Without aldosterone, we tend to pee away a lot of that sodium, and consequently, we'll pee away some additional glucose. So we'll also, because of the reduced cortisol production, not have that moderating factor for our insulin management in the bloodstream. And so again, hypoglycemia is likely, and all of the symptoms associated with hypoglycemia: headache, dizziness, syncopal episodes, sweating. And for women, as this progresses and their body starts to lose the ability to maintain homeostasis, irregular absent menstrual periods, which tends to be a sign and symptom of many chronic disorders as it progresses, simply because the body is trying to shut down non-essential systems, and the reproductive system is one of them. Addisonian crisis. So this is a life-threatening problem, and basically this is a patient usually untreated by someone for this. They're not getting hormone replacement or anything. They've managed to compensate for this, and they've just put up with the chronic problems. They haven't seen anyone, or it hasn't been diagnosed yet. They get to the point where they're just at that stage in their production of these key hormones that they can't manage it anymore. And so some stressor, something causes them to tip the balance. It could be an onset of an infection. It could be a life event, the death in the family, or a motor vehicle accident, or something that threatened their life that caused a sudden sympathetic response. And when the sympathetic response happens and those hormones aren't there to do what they need to do, guess what? The adrenal glands don't release what they need. The patient is already experiencing low blood pressure, dehydration, not getting adequate food, not getting adequate nutrition, not maintaining their blood sugar well, and boom, they start having sudden issues. So this will be an acute onset of pain in the lower back, abdomen, or legs, severe vomiting, diarrhea, the associated dehydration compounds everything else, and then low blood pressure, including hyperkalemia. And you should manage this and look for this specifically. Remember, if we sodium and potassium act on like a seesaw, if one's up, the other one's down. So if we have decreased levels of sodium in the body, we are holding on to potassium. And so you could have the associated cardiac problems with that. Eventually, loss of consciousness and death can occur. So we need to recognize very quickly that this might be what's going on. And as you might suspect, the treatment is very simple, and you'd probably treat any patient that presented this way in a similar manner, whether they had Addison's disease or not. We'll talk about that next. Let's look at treatments for Addison's disease. Remember, this is hard to diagnose initially, and so really getting a good history, looking at the patient's background, talking to them about what's been going on with them for the last several weeks and months, and over a year, is really important to assess that, plus to look at family history as well. Labs will be taken to identify if there are any specific hormone deficiencies, any of their electrolytes out of whack. Again, we might see hyperkalemia and hyponatremia, so we need to look for those things. Hormone replacement therapy will be the treatment of choice, and some of those hormones can only be injected. Others may be taken via an oral replacement method. But in any case, these patients may likely be on hormone replacement therapy for an extended period of time, especially if we can't immediately fix the cause of the primary or secondary adrenal insufficiency. You may see that when we remove adrenocorticotropic hormone-producing tumors, we see this a lot in lung cancers and other cancers, that they produce these tumors that just start releasing this flood of ACTH in the system. When those tumors are removed, the sudden loss of ACTH to the system is not matched by production from the pituitary gland. The pituitary gland has said, well, you don't need me to produce this anymore. And what happens is that there's a huge sudden drop of ACTH in the system, and the cortisol production just stops. And so that could be one of the reasons that this happens. And you need to be managing that, keeping an eye out for that with these patients. And maybe you need to replace ACTH specifically. Crisis. If they're in an Addison's crisis, Addisonian crisis, the basic treatment is very simple, really. Initially, fluids and dextrose, we're going to replace the fluid, maintain blood pressure, and get the blood sugar up, which are the two things we'll probably identify very quickly, because we look at that for anybody with altered mental status or syncope, and we'll then find out later that, wow, their hormones are out of whack as well, so we're going to do hormone replacement. But initially, the treatment's going to be probably similar to what you do for any syncope patient and any patient with low blood sugar. Nursing considerations. Well, take a good history. We need to make sure we're trending our vital signs and that we're monitoring for sudden drops in blood pressure, such as an Addisonian crisis. Watch for onsets of that and be aware that this could be a possibility. Monitor your labs, specifically your sodium and potassium levels. You're going to be looking at hormone levels as well, but in the near term, things that could go out of whack very quickly, sodium and potassium levels. Of course, your I's and O's are very important. What are we taking in? What are we putting out? And our blood glucose. Patients are a fall risk. If they've got a risk for syncopal episodes, guess what? They're a fall risk. So maintain your fall precautions with these patients. That means when you're not in there looking at them directly, you need to have the bed down and the side rails up. You need to make sure that they know that if they don't feel good, they need to ask for assistance when moving about and things like that. Educate the patient and family about the disorder. There's lots of good resources. I've put some links in the show notes that will be great links to give to patients and their family members to learn about Addison's disease. Again, the National Institutes of Health really provide a great resource of good, high-quality information that's easy to understand for people at all levels in the medical process, whether they're patients or medical professionals. As always, I have a bunch of great links and follow-up information available for you over at nursingshow.com in the show notes. So you want to make sure you check out the show notes information to make sure that you're applying this correctly. Again, I can give you a short overview here. You really need to dig in depth and make sure you understand how it applies to your own nursing practice. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind all of you that you can find a lot more information, including links to everything discussed in this and every other episode, over at nursingshow.com. You'll find links to the show notes right there at the top of the page under the show notes link. You can also look back and check out all of the great articles and other information you'll find available at nursingshow.com. If you want to comment on this episode or any other episode, you can, of course, comment on any article at the Nursing Show site. There's a comments link. You can also send us email in. Our new email address is nursingshow@gmail.com, nursingshow@gmail.com. Catch us by email. Send us in your tips, suggestions, links to news items, and yes, corrections, because we want to make sure we have the best possible information here available for you on The Nursing Show. Don't forget, you can also find me on Twitter and Facebook under the handle PodMedic, and you can also find and become a fan of the Nursing Show fan page. You'll get updates, information, and usually early access to the Nursing Show. When I record it, I post the links up there earlier in the week. Time now to close out the show with some PodSafe music, again from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is a song by Darren Jeffrey called Sweat. If you like what you hear, there's a link in the show notes for Darren's music, and you can also find a link there for his iTunes link if you want to go ahead and purchase one of his songs. Great way to show support for these independent music artists. In the meantime, I will make sure I'm back here again next week every Friday with another episode of The Nursing Show, and I want to remind you, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Don't forget to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care. Nobody gonna give you a ride. Ain't nobody gonna carry you.
soul. I heard you call.